Good afternoon, listeners. Thank you for tuning in to episode 3 of Step Connections. Today we have the honor of interviewing Johnny Gioli. Mr. Gioli is a singer who travels the world. Thank you for being here, Mr. Gioli.
Oh, my pleasure, Dan. Thanks for having me.
Without further ado, let's get right into the interview. So where did you grow up?
So I grew up, it's a long story, so I grew up in New York. I was born in Brooklyn, and then my family transitioned over to Pennsylvania. So it was quite the transition going from sort of city life to all of a sudden farm life. So most of my education was all in Pennsylvania, and then I moved to Los Angeles area, and I'll talk about why, but for most of my life was spent in California.
How has your family supported you in your life?
Good question. So they fed me, which is very important. So, you know, with my career, I'll tell you a little bit about who I am, and for those that don't know who I am, I started as a professional musician at a very young age. I started writing songs at 8 years old and professional at 11. So professional means when you perform or you do something, a career, you're being paid for it. That's the technical, you are then professional. So at 11 years old, I became a professional musician, and my parents supported that career choice at that very young age. You know, not only financially, because the equipment's expensive, but with great emotional support. So that's how, and that was very, very effective for me to stay on a great path for my professional career.
Who was your biggest role model as a child?
Whoa, okay, so I'm an old rock and roll dude, so I listen to bands like Kiss, and do you even know who Kiss is? Okay, good, whew, all right. So, like Kiss and Scorpions and Van Halen, little did I know that later on in my life I'd be playing with those groups in big venues, but I loved... Well, role models. So there's music role models, and there's people role models. I really respected my parents because they're great people, and how they supported me, you know, with my career. But I basically love anyone who's good to someone else. So those are all my role models.
How was your relationship with your parents?
It was awesome. So you have to kind of imagine this, and that I was this young kid with very, very long hair. So in high school, my hair was like almost down to my waist because that was the business I was in. It was like very, music was about hair bands and big hair and stuff like that. And they were, they loved it. And when people would make fun of me, you know, and, you know, kids and people, you know, adults, everyone would make fun of me. They were the first to my mother and father to stand up, like, you don't know what he does. He's a musician, professional musician, blah, blah, blah. So it was a very interesting upbringing, and my parents, we got along. I will tell you, my mom managed our band, and she was also like our driver, because obviously I couldn't drive a car. And my dad was like our truck driver, and he would be at every single show, because I literally played just about every weekend as a kid in a different venue along the East Coast. So we were always traveling and working, and my dad, mom and dad were there, and they worked like normal jobs. So we'd come home in the middle of the night and they wouldn't have any sleep, and they would go directly to work. They were incredible supportive parents.
Where did you attend high school?
I went to high school in Lancaster, Pennsylvania. If you've ever heard of the Amish country, that's where I went to high school, at Hempfield High School. Now, my career took me out of school, and I finished with what's called a GED, General Education Diploma, because I was on the road. I was touring, so you can kind of call it homeschooled a little bit. So I went 3 years to Hempfield, and then I was off to California for my career, because I had a very, very big record deal on MCA Universal. So you know Universal Pictures. Universal is my record company that I put my very first international album out in 1992.
What inspired you to become a singer?
Great question. I have an older brother, he's about 6 and a half years older than me, and he was in a high school band, And when your sibling is in a band and you see him doing something and having so much fun, it made me want to do the same thing. So my brother inspired me to play music, but I didn't know that I had any talent to play music. I just looked at the passion in music and loved when performing in front of people and getting a response, like doing a theater show and there's a funny line and people laugh. That response was really what drove me to become better and better and better. So that's how it happened for me.
What were some of the challenges that you faced in school and your social life?
Excellent, excellent question. Well, if you can imagine being raised in a small town, having very, very long hair, and at 11 years old, knowing what I wanted to do for the rest of my life, that alone was a challenge for having people understand. And I got into many, many arguments. I was always respectful, of course, but got into a lot of arguments with teachers and principals who didn't understand why I was missing. I missed a lot of days in school because I was performing. It was a hard balance. But socially, it was difficult because my friends were out riding their bikes and I was in a recording studio writing songs.
So what kind of performing did you do while you were in school?
So, I started out, okay, so I'm going to take you back. So I started out writing songs, young age, as I mentioned, and then playing small venues, like we would call a club, you know, or a shed, so under 2,000 seats. So, that was primarily the way I started the career, and then it grew, you know, obviously from
Mr.
there.
Mr. Tower, please call the office.
That's okay, but this is live is great.
So, how long have you been a singer?
So, yeah, literally, that's going to disclose my age, my real age, Dan. I'm an old man of 50 and performing since I was 8 or 11, technically, so long time. So my career started with a very large record deal. It was about $8.5 million record deal, and I was in my young 20s, so long time, and I'm still performing.
How has the role in the music industry changed since you started?
Well, it's changed drastically. It's interesting. Dylan, in America, we tend to move on very quickly to different styles of music. It changes. You know, one day we're listening to rap, next day we're listening to country, and we're listening to rock, we're listening to classic. My audience is primarily in Europe, Asia, the UK. And it's interesting because there, music doesn't really change. They fall in love with a particular style of music, let's say just straight rock, you know, classic rock stuff, and they keep it with them the rest of their lives. They don't really sway. Here in America, we tend to like, what's the next thing? What's the next thing? That's been the biggest, noticeable difference in the music business is how the audience has changed stylistically. And of course, the way we put music out now has drastically changed. We don't need these fancy recording studios anymore. I will tell you that in 1992, we spent $500,000 making an album. Today, if you spend more than $20,000, you're a little nutty. The technology is so incredible that we can make records. Basically, I do most of my records in my home recording studio now, where before I used to go to these big fancy studios. So the technology has changed, the audience has changed, and record companies that would support your album, they obviously still exist, but they're not needed as much anymore, because you guys know as well as I do, you can go write a cool song and get it on YouTube and start engaging with fans and talking with them and building your own viral presence because of technology. So technology has drastically changed the music industry. Great question.
What's your favorite part about singing for an audience?
It's the loud cheering. Okay, so what it is about music for me. You know, when someone has a career and is successful. Success is measured in many, many, many different ways. There's people who want to be successful financially. There's people that want to be successful just for the passion of what they're doing or the art form or whatever. For me, I never chased money. The money would come after I would perform or whatever. So for me, it was waking up and being passionate about what I'm doing. So music is, for me, it affects people. So when I sing a song that people love and I get a reaction, that reaction is everything. It's more than money can buy you things. It's everything. That feeling of acceptance on that particular song that you wrote, that you had in you, the vision, the sound, the melody, the statement. When you get that reaction, that's like, ah. And I will tell you, so after 40 plus years of performing, so I don't know if you guys have ever been to like the XL Center. The XL Center is small to me. When I go in the XL Center, I go, wow, it's so small. When I go to Europe, I play for 40,000 to 120,000 people. And it's big. And I don't, and when I come here, if I were to do a show here, I'd be lucky to put 10 people in Starbucks. It's amazing the difference in the world. But to hear that crowd after song number one, and after 40 years of doing this, I'm not nervous, but I need to hear that response to know that everything is okay. When I get that response, that is the best feeling, and that's why I sing, to change people. And then the comments, this song has changed my life. I was fighting cancer, and I used this song to lift me up. And I love this because that happened in my life, and it changed my life. Those are the reasons that I'm a performer, not the money. Money comes. It's a tool.
How did you get into Crush 40?
How do you know about Crush 40? Okay,
we all
awesome.
Heard about
it. So Crush 40, so Jun Sonoi, who is the head production guy for Sega in Japan, was a big fan of my group Hardline. Hardline was my first international worldwide release. That's the one where we spent way too much money. And it featured a guy named Neil Sean from Journey. You know, don't stop believing. You know that song? Don't stop believing. Okay, so Neil Sean was in my group called Hardline. And Jun Sonoi from Sega was a huge fan, and he contacted, it's weird, because so it's all about who you know and, you know, in a lot in this world and how it works. So Jun Sonoi, he contacted a man named Doug Aldridge, who was in a group called Whitesnake. You guys, I don't know if you know Whitesnake. Okay, your teacher does. And he contacted me and said, there's this man in Japan, and he wants to talk to you about creating music for games. And I said, I don't create music for games. What is that all about? And so we connected, and he said he had this idea, and he wanted to show me some scenes. So back then, we're going back to 1998, you guys. The Japanese people from Sega would draw storyboards of those games and send it to me, and it was in English, and it was in Japanese. Of course, I don't read Japanese. And there'd be a storyline about a scene, and it connected for me. I said, wait, this is cool. Because it's like building music for a movie. You have soundtrack music, and you have the movie. And I scratched my head, and I contacted June. I said, we should make a band out of this so that people could and kids could relate to that game by either the music or the game itself. It all worked hand in hand, and I enjoy it. And we're now 20 years, getting ready to work on another game, as a matter of fact, for all you Sega Sonic lovers. It's become a very, very, very big band. It's just two guys in that whole gaming world. So that's how Crush 40. Now, okay, so where'd the name come from? I was in my young 30s when this started, and I never wanted to turn 40 years old, ever. So June says, what should we call it? And I said, just let's crush 40 because I don't want to be 40. Now we're going to have to do crush 50. So I'm just kidding. But that's how the name came about. And it's I just returned from Japan not too long ago. And we did a few shows. And I'm always amazed at the size of the audience. It's cool. And I'm going next week to Milwaukee to do an event for Sega, so Crush 40 lives.
What was it like working with June?
With June? June's great. Good question. June is a, he's a composer of music only. So he's always really receptive to what I write. He sends me a scene. He goes, Johnny, this is the scene. The evil Eggman does this, that, and the other. And I didn't know. I don't play the, I've never played the games ever. Actually, I lied. I play one racing game, like Sonic's All-Star Racing. And that's it. So all these games, I didn't know about these characters. So June was really great. He'd say, write something, you know, like this. This is the scene. And we just, we're like a great team. He handles the music. I do lyrics and melody. We record. We do everything remotely. Send it. And we're done. So June's a great guy. I just talked to him this morning.
So what does a typical day look like for you?
Oh, I sleep all day. I don't cut the lawn. No, I'm kidding you. So a typical day. So I'm what you call, this is a big word, I'm an oxymoron rock guy. So what does that mean? It means that I'm not a normal, typical rock guy. I've never been interested in drinking or drugs or any of that kind of stuff. I'm up early. Look at that. I'm at the gym. Oh, I'm showing her my muscle. I'm showing her my big arm muscle. And so I'm up really early, 4:30, 5 in the morning, because most of my business is in Europe and Asia, which is many hours ahead, minimum 6 hours ahead. And so I get up early and start doing, you know, communicating with different venues and shows and preparing for a tour. I do that after the gym in the morning. And then I usually go into my recording studio and work on whatever I hear. I get a lot of ideas running on a treadmill or running outside. And any musical idea, that's my job. I go into the studio and I start building songs for a next album or whatever. So I just returned from Bulgaria, a massive show there. And now I will be on tour from now. We're in April, right? Yep, early April. Through December, right before Christmas. So preparing is not only physically preparing, it's mentally preparing, it's every single venue where we are, it's television, it's radio, it's podcasts, it's all kinds of cool stuff like this, but it's a lot of work. People think, you know, rock stars, yeah, cool, you go and you show up, you grab your guitar, you plug it in. That's the easy part. The difficult part is finding the time to have that one good healthy meal when you're on the road, TV, radio, interviews, meet and greets, and trying to find a little time to sleep. So I will be doing that from now until December 9th, 10th. So it's a very, very busy job.
What has been your proudest moment so far as a singer?
Great, great, great question. I think it's my new solo album that's coming out, and I'll tell you why. I've made over 50 albums in my life. I have gold records. I have platinum records. I have sellout awards. I've done all that cool stuff, which I'm really proud about. But now that I'm getting older, I want to make a difference in other people's lives. So my solo album is dedicated to a young kid. He's about 19, 20 years old now, who had a very bad accident here in Madison, Connecticut, actually. And he's now paralyzed. So, yeah, he had a diving accident. And so I dedicated this album to him. And it's called One Voice. And it's really cool because what I did here, so this is my most proud moment of being a singer, is I involved all the fans, hundreds of thousands of fans worldwide, to donate to help Joe. And so I call the album One Voice because together, everyone involved, we're one voice. So when I can put out music that helps people, heals people, changes people, that's the reward for me. So that's my most proud moment. So that album comes out July 13th. And so we're hopeful to be on like Good Morning America and the Ellen Show and all kinds of stuff like that. So it'll be fun.
So what has been the absolute best part about working on this album?
That particular album, I think it's seeing the comments of people worldwide uniting. And you know what, you guys, that's what's missing right now in our world. Our world is deficient in, very deficient in love and harmony and helping each other. You see the news like I do, and it's depressing and it's scary. And just coming to the school and having to show my ID and just practically getting a pat down, like a police pat down, is scary. And I feel really horrible for the youth today and what you have to worry about. So to have the entire world unite and do something great for someone by way of donation, by way of love, is the pinnacle, most epic part of my career. And I'm going to tell you a little story, and this is really wild. So we watch a lot of news. We see a lot of bad news, right? I wish there was a great news channel. There's always a bad news channel. But it's my son, who you guys know, because we got a couple hockey players here, Brandon came to me one day, and he said something that was so amazing to me. I couldn't quite understand it. He said, there's so much war going on, like in Iran and Afghanistan. He goes, Dad, why don't we just drop a bomb on them? And I'm like, whoa, Brandon, come here. And I read something to him, and I read, it was a fan, brother and sister in Iran, and they said, Johnny, your music lifts us every day. Your positive influence on music and on us is what gets us through our day. We just want to love. We want to be happy. We want to have friends. We want to play. We want to enjoy our life. And I said, Brandon, do you want to drop a bomb on them? And he was like, whoa, Dad. He goes, Dad, I'm sorry. So when you have the whole world, what you don't know is that there's kids just like you that want to play hockey, they want to play sports, they want to run around, they want to have their friends, they want to laugh, they want to love, they want to have good families, they want to eat good food. This exists around this world. So doing this album and getting all these people involved who don't even know this kid, they don't know him. They just know my music and my heart, and they donate. That is a cool world.
So what types of challenges would someone with this job face?
Dylan, you know, the biggest challenge is the responsibility. Because when you are in the public's eye and you are visible, you're on camera all the time, people see you in public, being responsible is sometimes difficult because I'm human. Sometimes I'm in a bad mood, just like you on the ice when that kid checks you up against the board. Just kidding. No one checks Dylan up against the board. So it's that being what we call being on all the time, being happy all the time. I'm human. Sometimes I'm not happy. Sometimes I wake up grumpy till I have my cup of coffee. But things like that, for me, are the challenges for my career. So just being responsible is not always easy to do. And you have to be, because you represent who you are to many, many people around the world. So,
what would you say was the most helpful thing in your life that propelled you to get where you are today?
I think I would have to say my persistence and passion for what I do is what really drives me. So no matter what you want to do in your life, you have to focus on it, and it can be accomplished. You can do it. There's nothing that can stop you. If you want to be an astronaut and you want to fly to be the first to Mars, you can do it. So not letting anything come between your dream is what I was all about at a really early age. And you have to focus on it, you have to be passionate about it, you have to love it. But success, like I said earlier, is measured in so many different ways. And so just waking up happy doing what you love to do, whether it's repairing a car or cutting grass or welding metal, type of trade, waking up happy and feeling fulfilled, that's the real meaning of success.
Do you consider yourself successful?
I do, yes, I do. I'm humble, and you have to remain humble when you're in a position like I'm in, and that goes back to that responsibility. But yes, I am. I have the proof. I have the gold records on the wall. but yes, I'm successful because people know who I am and they know my heart. And I see the, I read the comments and I'm like, wow, that's incredible. When you change someone's life through music, for me, that's being successful.
What advice would you give someone looking to start becoming a musician?
Well, I would think that, again, focusing on whatever instrument you're interested in, say it's a guitar, have that with you all the time. Live it and breathe it. Don't let it consume you, but you really have to live music. So I think back when I was your age and I was at my kitchen table, I must have made my parents nuts because I was always thinking, always melody, and my dad used to make fun of me. He'd go, he'd make fun of me because I always had a guitar with me where I was always singing. So it's important that you just focus on the instrument that you want to play. And then you guys have the most amazing educational means. You have not only your teachers, but you have the internet, which opens up a whole world of learning if you use the internet correctly. I still look to enhance, even after all these years, my chord knowledge, like guitar chording. I still look on YouTube and go, wow, that's a cool chord. That guy played an augmented seventh minor, blah, 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 blah. So I'm always learning. So learn as much as you can. That's the key to it. And then focus.
How would you define success?
Ah, okay. So I touched upon this a little bit earlier on. And I'll just sort of expand on what I said. But success is measured differently for everyone. It's can be financial for some people. I made $1 million. I'm successful. Okay. That's fine if that's how you define it. Success is making change. Success is waking up and feeling fulfilled. So I will tell you guys, as you think about careers for yourselves when you get older and you know, college sort of forces us to think about what do I want to do? I need to make a decision. It's hard. It's hard for a young person to think about what they want to do. What I always say even to my own kids is that alarm is going to go off in the morning, meep, 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 and you're going to hit it. And when you hit it, make sure you're happy with where you're going to go that morning or that afternoon. We spend a lot of time working. Make sure it's something that you feel fulfilled, and that will define success for you.
What is your favorite place that you have played at, like, so far?
Okay, so we have this massive world map in my home, and I try to point to all the places I've been. I've been to a lot of beautiful places, but I will have to tell you that Bulgaria is probably one of my favorite places to play, and I'll tell you why. Because rock music was illegal. You could go to jail. It was a communist country. And if you played a Van Halen song or any song, even, you know, a country song, anything that was not Bulgarian music, you could go to jail. So if you could only imagine how receptive these people are to our classic rock music. They still wear AC/DC shirts and things like that and Scorpions. It's wild there. So Bulgaria is a great place for me to perform. It's tens upon tens upon tens upon thousands of people, and they're all, it's like a Justin Bieber concert. I don't like Justin Bieber. Just saying.
Yeah. So are there any other questions?
What's your favorite song you've made, either recording or just the melody?
Oh, man, that's a hard question. So I have probably written over 500 plus songs, 50 plus albums, soundtracks. I've done movies. I don't know if you guys know Brandon Lee. It was Bruce Lee, the martial art guy's kid. So The Crow and Rapid Fire was his first movie. That was all my music in that movie. That's a tough one. I don't know that I can answer it. There are several. I'll give you one. There's a song on my very first album. It's called In the Hands of Time. that's my favorite song because my dad inspired that song because I would sit in the recording studio and I wouldn't have the idea and I'd get frustrated and the record company was saying, look, we need more songs, more songs, more songs. And as an artist, you know, if you have, like if you're a painter, you have this blank canvas and you start painting and you see it when you see it and then you paint it. Same thing musically. I can't just sit down and start, okay, I'm going to write a song today. It doesn't work that way. It's an idea. You're inspired. So my dad said, relax, relax. Everything's in the hands of time. And I'm like, boom, there it is. So that song, and I still play it today, In the Hands of Time, on an album called Double Eclipse, which was a real eclipse that happened, and for my first album with Hardline, In the Hands of Time.
Well, thank you for taking the time out of your busy schedule, Mr. Julie, to join us for an interview on Step Connections.
This is awesome. Thanks for having me, guys. Good luck.
Before we completely close, sure. if a person who is listening to this podcast right now, how would they follow you, or how would they, you know?
So I'm very Googleable. So if you just put in Johnny, G-O-L-E-G-I-O-E-L-I, I know that's such a tough Italian last name, Johnny, G-O-L-E, G-I-O-E-L-I, you will find Wikipedia, you will find every album, where I'm, all my tours, the videos, all that kind of good stuff.
Well, thanks, you again.
Guys. You're welcome.
And a special thank you to our listeners for tuning in. Have a fantastic day.
Thanks, guys.